Hello and welcome to episode 175 of the Saints Score podcast, where we talk about everything going on at Southampton Football Club. Is it the end of Southampton's Premier League spell? Well, we don't know quite yet, but it's not looking good. In another instalment of 19th versus 20th, Ruben Sellers' side came away with 0 points, this time losing to West Ham United at London Stadium. And who do we have next? Well, only Manchester City. It's me, Harry Tizzle, along with Ollie Bowes. The other two, well, it seems that they don't want to talk about this game. They haven't turned up, but they told us they weren't going to be available, so they haven't just blanked us. But I still have Ollie. Yeah. How are you doing this week?
I'm very good. It's great to hear you doing the introductions again. It's good to know that media degree is going to good use. It sounds so professional, so smooth. I mean, I did my very best when you were away, but I can't quite fill that void. You know, you are the master at these things, so. I can't imitate you, unfortunately. But yeah, it's good to be back. We had a little break. We had a kind of unofficial break over international break because we just kind of didn't really know what to talk about. So, but we're back. There's only two of us, but we have the pleasure of talking about these two games, don't we?
We do, absolutely. And to be fair, I really enjoyed the episode that I wasn't on.
Technically, as you're not a presenter, you should have left a review because you enjoyed the podcast
yeah,
so much.
I should have done. I think I've already left a review on two or three different accounts.
Harry. Oh, corruption at its finest. Can't even admit to that on the podcast.
five star reviews. A lot of them probably did come from us. But that's the way it goes.
But if you want to leave a review, then that'd be very much appreciated. We'll shout you out if you're leaving us a review. We'll say right at the episode, there's none this time, but if there is for the next one, we'll make sure to say thank you for leaving us a 5-star review.
Absolutely. But sadly for us, it wasn't a 5-star performance from Southampton. It was
far from it.
Yeah, maybe 1-star, 2-star at the absolute most. We didn't really do too much, and it started with the team selection. Ollie, when it came out, what did you think?
The way I looked at it was that the manager knew it was a big occasion, so he picked experienced players. I think that's what it seemed like to me. Mara and Walcott starting up front was quite an interesting combo. But Kaleta Carr coming back, Bednarak, these are experienced centre-backs, and I think he kind of wanted to prove that point. Yeah, I was looking at it, I was thinking, I'm not overwhelmed by it. I don't think it's amazing, but I can see what he's doing, trying to put some experience back into the side, not let the occasion get the better of them, and hopefully that kind of paid dividends, because every single time it's mentioned that we have a young squad and that there may be been it's too much for them as youngsters, so let the experienced guys play. So I kind of understood the reasoning behind it, but yeah, it didn't look our strongest side, which is concerning when you're going into a game that is so important like this.
I mean, yeah, you talk about it being an important game. I think early in the season, 5-6 games ago, we had Leeds 19th, 20th, a chance to, you know, maybe not go outside the relegation zone, but get really, really close to 17th place. And it was that same again. If we got 3 points on the board, it would have been level with Everton on goal difference and really put the pressure on. I think Mikey, quite a few podcasts, and he's probably still correct in saying it if he does still, in the fact that he says that we're really, really close to being able to get out. But the problem is we're just not getting the points on the board. At the start of the game, it felt like it was there for the taking on a personal point of view. I heard the atmosphere. They felt a bit nervous. I think their players felt a bit nervous. They did a lot of loose passes. Ours did as well. But as the away team, it felt like we started the game okay. Not particularly well, but you know, we were fine. Did it feel like it was a bit of a missed opportunity at the start when they felt a bit hesitant? I feel like the fans got on their back a bit at the start as well when they were kicking the ball out of play, launching it to our centre-backs for us to rebuild. What are your thoughts on that?
First of all, it was a really poor game of football, especially at the start. I mean, football was the real loser that day. I mean, yes, again, like both sides failed to take risks and be really sloppy with their possession as well, which meant you had, like you say, loose passes, dodgy touches, and no real progression. So long balls, aimless, just kind of bouncing around like pinball, really. It was not a great watch. There was moments where we put small bits together and it seemed positive. But on reflection, it just seemed that 2-3 passes were good and then it would break down by the fourth. And that seemed like that. The whole game seemed like that, in the fact that we put a few things decent together and then it just fell apart by a loose pass or a miscontrol, just something that lets you down. You don't make the next correct decision. I think it just kind of summarizes our whole season, to be honest. The fact that in the Premier League, you've got the very top teams who can play beautiful, quick, aggressive football, making progressive passes the whole way, putting like 6, 7, 8, however many passes together to get to the end and create a chance. We can't string 3 or 4 passes consecutively together without giving away the ball. And I think that's the reason why we struggle to put pressure on teams so much. Like you say, there were spaces in that West Ham side. There was so much space around. And the players knew what they needed to do. Like Theo Walcott, we've been mentioning, takes up really good positions. But one thing that just kind of summarised it is that he was running into a load of space, which there was all game. Through ball is played to him and it hits the back of his heel and then bounces off. It's just like, it just seems like the whole game was like that. Missed opportunities, wasted possession, just wasteful overall, really.
I mean, you talk about a summary of the season, and I think one thing that definitely sums up was this game overall, in the fact that it felt like we had a bit of a lack of attacking quality. I mean, in the first half, we had that half chance of Theo before they fouled the back of the net. And the way they did, we give away a cheap free kick through Chaleta Sarr. They throw the ball into the box. No one is anywhere near Agard. He heads it into the back of the net. VAR take 3-4 minutes. I don't know why. I thought he was onside at the start. I continued to think he was onside. And then he was onside.
Yep.
Is that, if at the end of the season we do get relegated, because look, at the moment, it's pretty probable. Do you think a big part of that is due to the fact that we just aren't learning from the mistakes that we're making? It feels like a lot of the time we are conceding from crosses, and even bigger from that, set pieces from either a corner or a free kick, a deep free kick, just launched into the box. Don't get me wrong, there was definitely direction on it, but it wasn't an absolutely crazed whip ball in that our defenders haven't been able to get anywhere near. The defenders made a great run. He's just ran off his marker, found the back of the net. It's 1-0.
I think what it looked like to me was a return to Ralph's high line, because as soon as that man was free, it was because no one had really tracked him. And as soon as it goes in the back of the net, every single player turns around, puts their hand up and looks at the linesman. Now, I know players do that anyway, because if someone scores, it can't be my fault. He must be offside. I know that's like a common thing that you get, but they all had that unity about it and that kind of like, oh, he's offside because we played an offside trap. But they just completely left him and someone didn't hold their line. I know we haven't got Mikey here, so he would probably analyse it much better than I can. But to me, it looked fairly simple that they were playing an offside trap and I don't know who the last man was, but he was playing him onside. He went through, had an absolute free header. It was a good header, but put it straight past the keeper who can't do anything. And we go 1-0 down. I think it just, again, it seems like a lack of identity. We have no real kind of idea of what we were doing. At least under Ralph, we consistently played that offside trap because we knew VAR would come in, and if they were offside by a toenail, it would be called off. So that was a successful tactic that we installed. I don't think we've necessarily been doing kind of aggressive offside traps for a long time, so it might be something that was implemented in the week, but clearly not practiced well enough because it didn't work. And the manager might be looking at it and thinking, this is something they were previously good at. Let's reinstall it because it was successful for us. But they're clearly out of practice, or you've got new people that have come in since and haven't been able to pull it off. So unfortunately, it was a tactic that didn't work and we got punished for it.
I was going to say, you mentioned Ralph there. He used to do it a lot. But the thing is, we had a slightly different squad and maybe a more experienced squad on it. Do you think that could be a part of it, that due to the fact that maybe if it was a younger player keeping him onside, he didn't quite have the... maybe bottle's the wrong word, but it's a word that I'm going to use here, in the fact that he thought, no, I'm going to have to uncommit to the line, try and go back and mark my man, rather than stay strong, let them run offside, and then we can rebuild from the free kick.
I mean, possibly, but I'm looking at that back line and thinking, that's probably our most experienced back line that you could put together. I mean, Walker Peters, season right back. Bednarek was brought in because of his experience, or he was brought back rather in the window, and is the only January, and I'm using air quotes there, signing that's in there. Kaleta Carr is an experienced international player, and Roman Perreault's probably another experienced player. So this is not like this is not new for them. They may be like fairly young in a sense, but in terms of our actual squad, they're the most senior players there, and that's the back four, that's the defense that should be marshalling the line and getting all the players where they should be. Elyounoussi is consistently picked on his defensive abilities instead of his attacking, which a lot of people have qualms with because of we need goals and we're picking players because of their defensive qualities. Stuart Armstrong is 31 now. I had to Google that and realize he's now 31. So that's another experienced head. These are all people that should know what they're doing, but we're still being punished for just not doing the basics right. It's immensely frustrating, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, when you can predict what's going to happen next, yeah. I think that's the most frustrating thing. I don't know if it can be as simple as just sourcing it on the training ground, but when you've done it for the whole season or up to the 29th game, you can sort of see where exactly the goals are coming from. I think Leicester had that problem either last season or the season before when they conceded something ridiculous like 15 or 18 goals from set pieces. Maybe it's the set piece coach you're getting really frustrated, but especially as a fan, you're getting very frustrated knowing every time they get a corner, every time they get a dead ball situation, you're worrying because you know that someone's going to lose their marker, get a little flick on, or maybe not even from a flick on, maybe straight from a header. They're just going to find the back of the net. But I really thought for a split second we were going to score almost immediately straight away. I think it was Elyounoussi that went down the left-hand side and Parard forced Fabianski into a really good save. Is that the sort of reaction that we needed to see, despite the fact that we weren't able to keep it going for the rest of the game? Or do you have any concerns that at the moment in that game, once again, it felt like Parard was probably our best attacking option, despite the fact that he was playing at left-back?
Well, I think it's a skill that he has. He has got a good shot on him, and he kind of picks up on that pocket. If he doesn't overlap, he kind of underlaps and has the opportunity there to strike it across goal, and he can hit it well. We know he can hit a ball well, but yeah, slightly concerning that he's the one that probably caused our most dangerous attempt during the game. It's a very good save as well, really quick reaction save, and I actually thought Fabianski had a really good game. There was a few saves in there that he did really well with. And when you're at the bottom of the league and you need to keep a clean sheet, that's what you need, good individual performances. And he had one at the end of the day. Amazing as well that West Ham went from 19th to what is it? Is it
14th.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, that shows you how close it is right down the bottom there. And suddenly imagine the weight off all of the West Ham shoulders, the fact that they're now up to 14th. It feels that this was a massive chance for us. And again, we've let it slide past, haven't we?
I mean, yeah, from a West Ham perspective, you can go into it and go, if we stay up and win the UEFA Conference League, we're in the Europa League next season, and then we've got a clean slate for the season after, whether it was with Moyes, whether it was with someone else, I don't know. But that's the sort of impact that it can have. Maybe if we're able to win, you get really close. Yes, we have Manchester City next, but then we've got Crystal Palace, and you think, go on, there's a really good chance there. But going back into this game, half-time, I mean, Bowen hit the bar just before the break as well. What was your feeling? Because I thought it was a chance to make substitutions immediately. For me, it clearly wasn't working in the attacking sense anyway. I don't know how you feel about it, but I was talking during the week to someone, and for a striker, you need one of two things. You either need the physical presence that Che Adams has, that even if he's not finding the back of the net on a regular basis, he can bring other people into play. He's that, you know, really effective presser that can get the ball up high, like I said, bring others into play in the attacking sense. And also he's found the back of the net, I think, the second most, you know, times for us this season. Or you need to be a goal scorer, such as the Danny Ings, such as the Ivan Tonys. I know teams around us don't really have that quality in a striker, but if they do, that's when you can really make the difference. And for me, I look at Sekou Mara and I look at Theo Walcott, and it didn't really bring either of those things. They're not clinical goal scorers. I mean, Sekou Mara could be in the future, but at the moment he's not. Theo Walcott's never really been that, even though he's been an effective player for us in spells this season, especially against Tottenham when he got a goal and assist. But they're not those goal scorers, and they're also not a physical presence. So it felt like every time the ball was going forward, they just, like you said a bit earlier in the podcast, they just weren't able to do anything with it.
No, it seemed like the ball wouldn't stick if we needed them to kind of put their back towards goal. And we weren't really finding the runs in behind either. So, yeah, like you said, we were stuck in this middle limbo where nothing was really being created, and it had to be changed. And we had a couple of substitutions around 60 minutes, I believe. Sulemana came on. I thought he looked very bright. Again, I think he has a he struggles to find that final ball, that final pass. But you can't take away from the fact, individually, his pace is blistering. He can take on players, which is what you want when someone comes on. And Alcaraz looks really kind of assured when he came on as well. So they were definitely positive changes, but you also kind of think, could they have been done earlier, as in like on the actual team sheet? Could you have put them in earlier? Because they seem like sensible changes that affected the game immediately. And I know we didn't get anything out of it, but it makes you think if they could have been involved in the starting lineup, would have the game gone possibly a little different?
I mean, yeah, Elianussi came off on the 54th minute for Sulemana. Mara also came off at the same time with Alcaraz coming on. And then a bit later in the game, Stuart Armstrong and Walcott came off. So all of our front four got taken off. And one of the people there that I want to talk about is Stuart Armstrong, because a couple of seasons ago, I felt like he was probably one of our most promising, most threatening attackers. I think there was that weird stat where he hadn't won in like 18 months when he hadn't played or he hadn't started or something like that. But he's really found it difficult in the last year. I feel like this game, he got into good positions, but his final ball just, you know, it wasn't great whatsoever. I mean, it's not an irregular trait for one of our attacking players this season, so it's not something I'm just attacking him with. And I think Mikey said a couple of podcast episodes ago, he suffered from a longer version of COVID a year and a half ago or something like that, so he could still be feeling the effects of that. But what do you feel like on the Stuart Armstrong situation? Because he's gone from this fan favourite, this guy that has just been able to instigate all of our attacks, a really good player on the ball as well, to someone that just hasn't been able to get going apart from that spectacular goal against Coventry in the FA Cup last season.
Yeah, and I mean, I used to love Stuart Armstrong, and I really like him as a player, as a character, but the thing I used to love about him was his progression on the ball, the way he'd carry the ball. He'd almost gallop in a way. He'd have his chest out, he'd run quickly, and he'd knock the ball past players, and he had a really good touch, close control, and could take a pass players. He used to love a croquetta and get around them. And then, yeah, just attack that space. And exciting players like that will, like you say, become a fan's favourite. But I mentioned it earlier that he's getting a little bit older now. And the Southampton way is that we'd have players performing at a high level and then we'd move them on. But he didn't do enough to move him to the next level. And he wasn't underperforming in the fact that we moved him off, so he just kind of stayed in limbo and then never really came back from, like you say, after COVID. He never really hit his stride, so he's just kind of plateaued a little bit in the side, in the squad, and he's been given his chances, but I can't really think of one that he's fully grasped and thought, yes, he definitely needs to start again next week, which is really disappointing, because we know he was showing that ability, but we haven't really seen it recently, which really puts it into doubt. You're like, is he still up to the level? Is he still a Premier League player, and can he still do it? Because, yeah, it's been 6 months, a year, and we still haven't seen it yet. So has it gone? Will it come back? We're not sure. But, yeah, really disappointing on that end, because, like you said, a fan's favourite who could really kind of bring that excitement into the attacks.
I mean, he was one of the players that came off. One of them that came on a bit later in the game was Ainsley Maitland-Niles, you know, as part of that front four. And the two players that got left on the bench, not really unsurprisingly at this point, because they hadn't made the squad in I don't know how long, was Orsic and Aribo. You know, when you're one goal down and you have these players that one was brought in the summer, in Aribo, that I think is still our third or fourth top goal scorer of two goals, which really shows how we've done this season. You started brightly in the season, but hasn't really been able to get going. And Orsic, who really hasn't got going at any stage whatsoever since joining in January, and they've been left on the bench. Do you think that's just their future over? Because at this point, I look at that and I think they're just bench fillers. They were in the squad because two other players are injured. And at no point were they able to come on. Because if they're not coming on where we're 1-0 down and we need a level of creativity that just simply wasn't there, then they're not going to come on at any point.
I genuinely don't know what's going there. Clearly something has not clicked with those transfers. In terms of their futures, I think Orsic there's a very high likelihood that he might just go to the exact same team that he came from, and he just goes straight back to where he was playing. I can see it. I can see him being kind of welcomed back to like a hero, and we just kind of cut our losses and say, this didn't work. With Aribo, I was thinking about this earlier, because the fact that we lost to West Ham kind of secures the fact that we're going to be watching Championship football next year. So I was kind of thinking, who would we keep? Who would we move on? And I could see Aribo reigniting in the Championship. I could see him being successful there. But it depends whether he'd have the motivation to go down, step down the level, prove himself with us, and then possibly try and come back up. But it really depends whether he wants to do that or whether he'd be moved on. And also what the manager thinks as well, because if we're going down to the Championship, then it will probably be a complete refresh. And it will be whether he looks up for it and whether he will stay with us. So I think if he was applied in the right way and he was genuinely motivated in the Championship, I could see him being a really good Championship player. And I think he would be very good for us in the future. I say in the future, like Championship's inevitable, but I'm just going to talk about like that at the point. I could see him do really well in the Championship. I think the problem is that he was one of those players that needs the minutes. And the fact we signed him was because he had this unbelievable record of playing so many games in a row. And I think he's a slow starter, which is really tough in the Premier League, because it's not a league where you can start slow. You have to hit it off the ground running, which really makes it difficult. But we've had some successful players in the past that were like that. I remember Morgan Schneiderlin after an injury. I think one of like the best defensive midfielders we've had at Southampton that I've seen is St Mary's. He always took a few games to get back up and running. We had the time to be able to get him back into the side, but Aribo's just not really shown anything when he's come in, and we don't have the time. We don't have the time to bleed someone in and try and get them back up into pace. We need results now because of the situation we're in, which means he's just fallen by the wayside, which is really disappointing. And I was really excited when he came in, and he looked like, especially in the friendlies, that he was going to be an important player. But it's just, again, it's another player that hasn't worked out.
Yeah, it's a player that hadn't worked out for two of the managers either, so him and Orsic. I think that's the interesting thing. I think when Jones went, I thought a lot of people thought he's gonna release these two players into absolute stars and they're gonna be his key players. They could really reignite under him, but it just hasn't happened like that. And I love in a way that you talk about relegation, just simply due to the fact that I think about a month ago you were throwing sticks at Jamie for even mentioning that word of possibly going into the Championship, and now that's a discussion that I imagine we'll be having right at the end of the season, but you never know. It's still just about possible. One player that did come on was Onacho. He did have a bit of an impact. He hit the crossbar. What did you think? Because I think in hindsight, I probably would have started him due to the fact that he has that physical presence against Kurt Zouma, against Agard as well. They weren't really challenged by our other two attackers, whereas when he came on, you immediately have that threat. If you can put crosses into the box, you can go long and bring others into play. I know it's easier to say when the game's already done and dusted, but I would have started him.
Yeah, he brings that chaos when he came on, which definitely got things kind of shaken up. It was a really good header, and it was unfortunate that it is just kind of inches away. And we haven't really seen too many headers. We've seen a lot of attempts to try and get it to his head that didn't actually land there. But one good ball that gets there put goalward and we almost score from it. So, yeah, I think you're right. It would have been a danger if he started and would have given something different to play off. He's also an absolute magnet for bringing down the ball with his chest. So you could whack it straight to his chest. He could bring it down, drop it off. And then if there's Mara or Walcott, they could then possibly get in behind. It would kind of be that Peter Crouch and Jermaine Defoe dynamic. I know a reference with ex-Pompey players probably won't go down well, but you see what I mean here. The similarities can be kind of drawn upon, can't they?
Yeah, but that's the best chance that we got until the full-time whistle. The home fans are ecstatic. And we were down in the dumps for what seemed like a very just again yep. in another crucial game. Do you think it was even further just compounded by the fact that Bournemouth got a very impressive win against Fulham? Forest and and Wolves drew, so they both got points. And another team around us got 3 points as well. Crystal Palace got 3 points. And Leicester City, yes, they lost, but they're going to have a new manager bounce now. Brendan Rodgers, a person that a lot of the fans wanted to go, has now gone, and they're going to get someone new. And it won't be Graham Potter, but it will definitely be someone else.
Yeah, and we mentioned this. It feels like we could just do like a soundboard of our reactions now. We could save the recordings and just press our standard reactions on a loss. But I've mentioned it so many times before. There, especially in the relegation zone, there will be teams that get upsets. They will get freak results and will get points. But it means that the games that are winnable, you have to get a win or at least at minimum a result. And a loss against West Ham, giving them a clean sheet as well, it just means they go from strength to strength, and we're firmly rooted in what was essentially a six-pointer. I remember the Bournemouth when they won against Liverpool. They had that fight, they had that desire, and they picked up 3 points that they weren't entitled to, but they went and got it. You know, everyone wrote them off and thought, oh, this is easy for Liverpool, they'll get a nice easy 3-0 win and move on. Done as us said, no, Bournemouth had a point to prove, and they created an upset that time. So we can't win the games that we have a chance in, and we can't cause any upsets, so we just do not pick up any points. What's that, 18 losses this season now so far? It's just it's just snowballing now. Real kick in the teeth seeing the other teams continue to pick up points when they need to, and we still struggle to do so.
I mean, Kyle Walker-Peters and Ruben Sellers both said similar stuff after the game, and I want to ask your opinions on it, because I wasn't too impressed from what I heard. I think one point they said that, you know, we had control over the entirety of the game, but for me, I don't know about you, but it's not control if they let you have the ball. I think a lot of the time, you know, we've lost 1-0 eight times this season because we haven't been able to break the opposition down. And West Ham probably look at it and go, if we get a goal, we sit in a low block, they can have all the ball they want. I think we had 57% of it, but they won't be able to get past us. So they could pass it between their defenders, they could pass it back and forth from their wings, but they won't be able to get through. So do you really think we had control, or do you think that's just an easy blanket statement to say when you look at the possession statistics?
No, because I was saying the exact same thing when I was watching the game. I said it's all well and good passing it between two centre-backs, putting it into Lavia, who has absolutely no options in front of him, so he drops it off back to the centre-backs again. It's not a threat. It's just holding the ball, trying to find an opening, and we're not able to progress it. So it's just so many sideward and backwards passes. And if that was at home, the fans would be getting on their back, because we weren't moving it forward. And it was funny as well, because West Ham were also struggling at the start of the game, like we previously mentioned, when no one wanted the ball whatsoever. It was so strange. But it just kind of continued throughout the game. We didn't really take a hold of the game and create any opportunities. That's the problem when you're dead last in the league, and you have been since the start of Christmas. People don't want to take that risks and be the one that made the mistake. They want to play it safe and they want to play it sideways. Well, you're not going to create any problems for the opposition. That's kind of what they want you to do. They're very happy for you to play a sideward pass. So, you don't win games by winning possession. You do it with goals, and we did not look like creating any goal-scoring opportunities, really.
They also spoke about margins as well, losing by the small margins and not getting the margins and all that sort of stuff. But do you think it really is small margins? At the start of the season, when we lost 1-0 a couple of times, or maybe things weren't quite going our way in a 2-1 loss, I thought, do you know what? One of those 50-50 situations where sometimes it goes for you, sometimes it doesn't. But that's the eighth time, like I said previously, that we've lost 1-0. And do you know what? I'm going to chuck the 2-0 loss against Brentford in there, because we conceded a second with the last kick of the game. So that was almost 1-0 before the 90th minute as well. Do you think it's really small margins when it happens on a continuous basis? I think if it goes for us sometimes, you know, 50, even 40% of the time, where half of those we get a point, maybe we get a win in some of them, then for me, I go, do you know what? Yeah, maybe you're a bit unlucky. But when it keeps happening, for me, it's not a small margin anymore.
No, and a loss like that as well means you created no real threat. I mean, if you lost 2-1, if you lost when we lost under Ralph and you threw away like a 2-0 and lost it 3-2 or something, it's devastating. But at least you can say you caused a real threat at the start of the game. and you have players like at least the strikers and stuff like that have a bit of confidence to take away, it's the defenders that take the rap. When you lose 1-0, everyone's coming out of that badly. That's the thing. No one can come off that pitch and said they've had it, like the defense have conceded, their midfield have been overrun, the strikers didn't score, no one's happy. And the real kind of it's a real hoover for any sort of not motivation, but just the confidence, really. No one's taking confidence at all from 1-0 losses. It's kind of the perfect result to win 1-0, I'd say. It's professional, it's calm, it's a clean sheet, and to be on the opposite side of that feels like a real kicker, doesn't it? So yeah, it's continued to happen. At the end of the day, it just feels like we're being, I'm going to use the word outclassed, it just feels like teams are coming to us and they're just so far ahead of us in terms of their trajectory and where ours is. It's just completely different places now, where I look at it and think, no, yeah, you probably deserve to be where you are. I don't really look at the league and think of a real outlier and look at them and go, there's no way we're better than them, because I genuinely can't make that argument anymore. I do think, no, they probably deserve to be there and we do deserve to be last. Is that a horrible thing to say? It's kind of true, isn't it? The table doesn't lie.
I think you're spot on every metric there, which I think makes me even more upset, to be honest.
I'm sorry.
It's as simple as that. You spoke about confidence there. Well, I think most Saints fans have none going into the next game. Manchester City at home, Saturday, 5:30. I mean, the last time they were on Sky Sports, under the lights, we were able to get a 2-0 win. And maybe it could happen again. You never know. Ollie, going into this one, they just come off the back of a 4-1 win over Liverpool without Erling Haaland. So, yeah. Well, have we got any hope? Have we got any hope of getting 3 points? Because if we get 3 points, maybe, you know, Bournemouth got a win against Liverpool, and then that sort of pushed them into the future games with that win against Fulham. That, you know, that could be a reason that they did so well in that game as well. Any hope?
Is there any chance that they might be resting players? Have they got a Champions League or anything?
All of the players. Do they have to rest all of the players?
Just don't put our side. Just put Edison in there on his own. Because even the thing is, their rotation is incredible. Such amazing squad depth and such talented players all throughout that side. But the one way that we were able to disrupt them under prime Nathan Jones ball, the fact that they had players that weren't really comfortable together playing and looked quite confused, and we were able to kind of punish those mistakes. I know Pep's been tinkering with a three at the back system, which is one centre back and two full backs, very fluid, setting up very interesting passing lanes and exploiting half space. It's classic Pep Guardiola, a really overly complicated system. So the one thing that could happen is that the players, we can find a way to exploit this new system. Do you know what? I genuinely don't even know what the formation is. It's probably not on FIFA. What is it? Like a free? Do you know what it is?
It feels like it's just a system at this point. Yeah. You got Stones roaming into the midfield, or you've got different players going in different positions. But talking about their fixture after us, it's Bayern Munich. So in the Champions League, under Thomas Tuchel, they're now top of the Bundesliga. So they're going to be full of confidence. So it's going to be a very tough game for them during the week. I remember the last game in the Carabao Cup when we played against them. I think they had that Sergi Gomez guy at left back. They had Walker at right centre back. They had Calvin Phillips, who hadn't played in what felt like ages in holding midfield. So they might put a lot of rested players out there. But due to the fact that we beat them last time, I think Pep will probably think that it's not a very good idea.
And the thing is, Pep always hypes us up in the interviews as well. It's always a running joke in like with my mates that Pep always says that we're so good and that we're a really dangerous team and all of this, and then we're dead last in the league with like 18 losses. He can't keep doing this. So I think he had a real respect for Hasenhüttl, because Hasenhüttl wouldn't compromise. He would play football against Pep, which is what he likes, and he'll give him a really aggressive handshake or something afterwards and kind of respects Hasenhüttl's style. And I think he even mentioned when Hasenhüttl got sacked that it was kind of, he was sad to see him go. So it'd be interesting to see what he says about Tellez and see how he kind of reacts to how he plays. Does he shut up shop and kind of stick 10 men behind the ball, or do we go out there, play the best that we can and probably get overwhelmed? But it'd be interesting to see how we play. Do we compromise or do we go for it? Who knows?
So you mentioned that there. I don't want to put maybe any disrespect on our own players, because obviously we're big fans of the club. We want us to do really well. But thinking about those like all or nothing documentaries, talking about Pep Guardiola there from what you mentioned, and looking at our recent form, yeah, I know it's better than it was at different points of the season. I know we're like 15th in the form table for the last 8 games. We're bottom of the league, so I look at it in a different way. I just can't imagine them sitting in, you know, those big meeting rooms and going, look, this is where Southampton are dangerous. This is where Southampton can hurt us. Because this is Manchester City. I can't imagine them all getting in a room and going, look at this, these different tactical movements. They, no, I don't believe it for a second. Although I know they will be doing that. So
it's a tough gig for the video analyst, isn't it? When he gets sent an email, can you find the dangers of Southampton, their goal-scoring dangers, to give a brief to the defenders? The poor guy's like pouring through YouTube videos like, they must have created something dangerous, right?
Yeah. Maybe against Tottenham. Maybe I'm being really, really harsh. I don't know. But you mentioned the approach there. How do you think we should do? How do you think we should approach this? Because for me, I look at it and I go, is this a free hit anymore? Because 9 games left, is there any such thing? Because we need points out of every single game that you'd almost, at the moment, go, once again, we have to go for the 3 points because nothing else will really do.
Yeah, it's gonna have to be a real dogfight, and I think we're gonna see. First of all, there's gonna be players that want to prove themselves. It always happens when we play top teams. We have young players that have the opportunity to play against these big players, and they're immensely competitive people. They have been since they were the age of 7. They want to prove themselves on the big stage, and this is the big stage. You've got arguably the best manager in the world. You've got some of the best players in the world that you will be up against. Players like Lavia will want to prove a point against Manchester City. So they're going to turn up and they're going to have that determination. The only problem with that is that Man City have a manager who installs the most aggressive, non-relenting, like emotion into them that they will not relinquish for a single second. And that's the problem that you have. You might think that they might take their foot off the gas and kind of make assumptions that it's going to be an easy game. But unfortunately, their manager is so determined to make sure that they do not do that at any second whatsoever. So it's going to be a mighty, mighty task to be able to get something out of this game.
For the players on our pitch, because maybe some return from injury, I don't know, Salisu and Che Adams, I don't know. I think they said they're going to have to wait for a bit later in the week to see that happens. Tino, he wasn't in the squad, but he's in that sort of match day, maybe the match day 19-man squad against West Ham, because he was pictured in London Stadium. Who do you want to see? Anything different? Or, well, obviously you're going to want to see something different than the result, but any players that were on the bench that you want to see start? I'm talking about Khaledim. I'm talking about Onacho. I'm talking about maybe Maitland-Niles. Who do you want to see?
I'd definitely say the first two. I think that would be an interesting matchup to try and create a bit of physicality to the game, because I think Man City are brilliant technically, but I want to see someone actually run at them, cause a bit of danger. I think Walcott would be good at picking up spaces. He would have to be clinical, which would be a change for Theo Walcott, but he can definitely take up positions and he's a kind of knowledgeable head in getting into those places. Sulemana would be good at running and being forward with his play. So I'd like to see him start. Whether he does is another matter. Stick Tall Paul in there and start whipping some crosses into him, see if we can create something like that. And I think those would be some good changes to make. Yeah, I think there's a few players that possibly didn't deserve to keep their place. So I think the names you've mentioned there are good shouts.
Right. Favourite time of the podcast. God. It's score prediction time. And it feels like at the moment I'm going for 1-1 for everything. And it works 50% of the time. Probably not even that much. So 2-0 to Manchester City. Maybe that's us being that's me being kind. I'm not sure, but that's my score prediction. What are you thinking?
I think they will get a few. I mean, if we could get a goal, I know this is such a
goal.
Like, yes. Have you seen one of those? They're great. Everyone jumps up and celebrates. It's amazing. I hope we do one. It's so crazy that I'm actually saying this, but I think if we could take a non-embarrassing loss with a goal, that would be a slimmer of hope that we could take into the next game. So if we lost like 3-1, it's like damage control, and I wouldn't mind that. I mean, if you forfeit the game, it's a 3-0, isn't it? So if we could at least get a goal, then that's so much better than just not turning up and losing 3-0.
Yeah. So this podcast, we've talked about West Ham, the 1-0 loss, and how we really, really should have done better. And, you know, that 1-0 defeat. Once again, really close, but at the end of the day, all we did is hit the bar and they took their one chance. We talked about Manchester City, the game coming up, and how the fact that we don't really have much of a chance. But you never know. It's football. We've beaten them once this season already. It's 1-1 in terms of winning games. So who's going to take that crucial one in the third encounter? And hopefully we can get somewhere near to 17th and maybe stay up. I'm not too sure. We talked about everything in between as well. It's been me, Harry Tizard. I've been joined by Ollie Boast.
Yeah, thank you very much for listening.
Hopefully next week we'll have all four of us back to talk about the Manchester City game, win or lose. I think I know which one's more likely. And the game against Crystal Palace, which if we lose, we might as well start be planning for the Championship. Thank you very much for listening. Remember to leave a review and we'll see you next week.